This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, powered by the Family Research Council, your embassy of faith, family, and freedom in the heart of our nation's capital. Now, here's your host, FRC President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this Thursday edition of Washington Watch. I just returned from the White House, where the foes of religious freedom were put on notice as Sam Brownback was sworn in by Vice President Mike Pence as Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom. And you know what? You played a large role in his confirmation. And persecuted Christians around the world will be the beneficiary of your willingness to get involved. So thank you. Thank you for responding when we ask you to make phone calls, send emails. It makes a difference. As I talked about last week, Sam Brownback confirmed 49-49, and the vice president cast the tie-breaking vote to confirm him. And you helped keep the Republicans in line on that. So thank you. And I've had a few conversations with Sam since then. He resigned his post as governor of Kansas yesterday. Now will be serving as ambassador at large for international religious freedom. And he's been doing this stuff for years. So anyway, we're going to be talking with him in the days to come. But for today's program, many Republican lawmakers are in West Virginia for the party's annual GOP retreat. Vice President Pence spoke yesterday. President Trump spoke earlier today. And we'll check in with our good friend, Congressman Louie Gohmert of Texas, who is at the retreat in just a moment. And once largely limited to low-income women and minorities, single motherhood is now becoming a new norm. According to the U.S. Census, today, one in four children under the age of 18, a total of about 17.2 million, are being raised without a father. Now, what does this mean for the country's future? Well, Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNS News, will be here with answers. Also, American researcher George Barna claims teenagers today are the most non-Christian generation in American history. Religion and culture expert Dr. Alex McFarland is on a mission to change that, and he'll be with us later to discuss the upcoming Christian Worldview Weekend that he is hosting in March. And we'll also be taking your phone calls here this afternoon on Washington Watch. Check out the website if you need more information, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Okay, GOP lawmakers left town yesterday for West Virginia for an annual policy retreat where they are sorting out their plans for the coming year. With us now is our good friend from the Lone Star State, Louie Gohmert. He represents the 1st Congressional District. I was in his neighborhood last weekend. He serves on the House Judiciary Committee and is vice chairman of the Judiciary Subcommittee on Crime, Terrorism, and Homeland Security. Louie Gohmert, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, always good to be with you, Tony. Thank you.
So how is the retreat going?
Well, it's going well today. Yesterday, obviously, was pretty rough with the accident involving the garbage truck. Today, the president spoke, he did a terrific job. But he also said, as we also all feel, that our prayers, even though some people don't like to hear this, our prayers are with those who were injured in the accident yesterday. We know one person on the garbage crew was killed. One was seriously injured as well. And there were some, bruises and bumps and slight concussions, but by those on the train. But overall, people on the train were doing well. For some reason, I just got exceedingly nauseous and wasn't able to talk to anybody last night. But today, doing well. And we had a great speech from President Trump. And one of the points he made after going through so many things great that has been accomplished, for example, having endured 8 years under President Obama where the growth rate never hit 3%, which is the first time in American history we've never hit a growth rate of 3%, at least once during a president's term. And now we've hit 3, and their projections, I know Atlanta Fed says they think that we'll hit 5.4 in the first quarter. So things are looking good. But I thought he said, President Trump said an interesting thing, you know, when he said, noting the things that the Democrats did not stand for. I mean, how do you not stand and really cheer when you hear that for the first time in American history, the unemployment for African Americans is at its lowest level ever? And how do you not stand up and cheer, you know, the fact that our motto, the only motto we've ever had, is "In God We Trust"? How do you sit on your hands through those kind of things? How do you sit on your hands when we pay tribute to a law officer who saw a need and a baby that was going to be badly mistreated, if not aborted, and this law officer and his wife adopted him? Or how about the gentleman that lost his legs, run over by a train, travels thousands of miles on crutches, and is so proud of being a part of a free America today? It just incredible, more incredible the things that Democrats did not stand up and cheer than the ones they did. But President Trump today here in West Virginia noted that the Democrats would rather see us not do well than see the country do great, and that's because they don't want Republicans to get credit. So it really does. I mean, after seeing that performance last or Tuesday night, it appears they would rather the country do poorly, and so that the Republicans don't get credit for doing a good job. That's pretty tragic. Even when if things went well under President Obama, we had to say this is a good thing. But it's amazing that's not the reciprocal of the other party.
I think what was on full display Tuesday night was that we are a nation that is clearly culturally and politically divided, where the things that once were celebrated by all, you have some who are not only indifferent to but hostile toward those very values. But those values are central to America's success.
Absolutely.
You know,
you bet they are.
America must be a good nation if it's going to be a great nation. And I want to get a sense from lawmakers there. As you're gathered there, you heard the president kind of gave a list of the successes, and there are many, talking about the economic successes, the tax cut reform package obviously helping out tremendously. Is there a sense that we need to continue marching forward and, you know, this idea that somehow we're going to bring Democrats, opponents of America's exceptionalism along with us? I mean, at some point, you just got to put that aside and move full speed ahead. Are we there yet?
It's hard to say. I think most people were shocked at things that the Democrats would not cheer. You're right. It does show that we are very divided on some issues. And I forget which Democratic convention it was where they had the vote on whether to leave God in the platform or not. And it
that was in Charlotte.
Like, was that Charlotte?
That was in Charlotte in 2012.
It sure sounded like they did not want God in the platform. But so that's something that we will not get beyond. But, you know, Jesus said, when they hate you, remember they hated me first, and we were told we'd suffer for his sake. But we have been growing up in, you and I have grown up in the country that really historically is the only place where Christians up till recently have never been prosecuted or persecuted for being Christians. And that is changing, and I thought surely elected members of Congress could not turn their back or sit on their hands with regard to our motto being "In God We Trust." I know there was a time it wouldn't have mattered what party you were part of. You could not have sat on your hands at the mention "In God We Trust." But apparently we are there, Tony. We're at a place where many Americans don't think we should thank God for anything. And that is a division that some of us, like you and me, we're not going to give up on that point, because being a Christian goes to the core of who we are.
Well, I think one lesson to learn from President Trump, as we've seen in this last year, is that, you know what, he's not going to be persuaded by his critics. He's just going to keep moving forward. And I hope some of your, I know you're already there, but I'm hoping some of your colleagues get that same message. With that in mind, what are some of the top, what are the top initiatives that the Republicans are going to be pursuing the remainder of this year coming out of this retreat?
Well, we have already pursued and reached further than I thought when it comes to energy independence. But the fact that we are now going to drill in a place that Jimmy Carter, who designated the Arctic Wilderness area that he wanted drilling, because there's nothing there that will be harmed by drilling. And yet, as President Trump today said, you know, if presidents going back to Carter and Reagan wanted to drill this area, and we now have gotten that done or gotten that open. So I think that's going to increase our energy independence. But a big thing also is getting our military back strong enough where we could defend ourselves. You know, the Chinese have grown incredibly strong, and now to the point that they're taunting us in the South China Sea and other places. Now Russia has had the nerve to taunt us in different places around the world, including closer to home, with their jets. So there was a time when they would have been afraid of taunting us, but we have got to get back our strength military, because as Reagan said, you know, he'd never seen a war start in his lifetime because America was too strong. You know, when they start is when adversaries are perceived as being weak, and we moved quickly that direction under Obama. But we're not through with peeling back regulations that have harmed Americans and harmed our economy. And we're already seeing the ones that have been peeled back in this past year making a difference. That's how you start moving the GDP forward. And the thing, of course, President Trump points out that we need to do something about our crumbling infrastructure. And it's just, you remember President Obama said, give me $900 billion and we're going to fix up the inventory infrastructure. And as it turns out, they maybe spent 6% of the $900 billion, but some of it was spent on just incredibly wasteful things like Solyndra. So we made a lot of people rich, a lot of Democrats rich, but harmed the country greatly, ran up the debt nearly twice to what it was. And so there wasn't a lot of talk about bringing down spending, but for many of us in the Republican Party, that's something that we have got to address. We just have to. We're digging our children and grandchildren into a deeper and deeper hole.
Quick, Louis, very quickly, we're up against a break. Any discussion of revisiting Obamacare and repealing it completely?
Absolutely. That was brought up, and we're not done. We're going to get it done, and the repealed individual mandate makes that where it's going to happen, period.
All right. All right. Very good. Louis Gohmert, as always, my friend, great to talk to you. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Good to talk to you, Tony. Thank you.
All right. Congressman Louis Gohmert of Texas talking to us from the Republican retreat in West Virginia. All right. When we come back, we're going to be joined with Terry Jeffrey of CNS News. Don't go away.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, That's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
A new U.S. Census Bureau report finds that the number of married couples in the U.S. who have children under 18 hit a 56-year low in 2017. Of all single-parent families in the U.S., single mothers make up the majority. With us now is Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNSNews.com. Terry, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
All right, before we're going to get into the details of this, but I just want to jump right on top of this from a standpoint of what kind of picture does this present of America's future?
It's a disaster, really. It's a cultural, it's a political, and it's an economic disaster. We've turned into a country where fewer and fewer people are getting married and having kids. You have the baby boom moving into retirement, going on to Social Security and Medicare. And what I see happening, Tony, is that the Americans who live the traditional life, who grow up, get married, have kids, stay married, work hard, they are going to be slammed by taxes and big government in order to cover the welfare benefits and the government entitlements for people who don't live that life, to put it very bluntly. And I think that it really is at the heart of the political divide in this country. It is both economic and cultural. The economic and cultural aspects of it are indivisible. Most people don't want to talk about the cultural aspect of it, but I think this disappearance of the traditional family in America is at the very heart of it.
Here's something that's kind of counterintuitive, especially from the standpoint of the political class, that the idea that children, when you have kids, they consume your resources, they take away from you. But actually what the data makes very, very clear is that married couple with children actually produce more when it comes to the economy.
They do. It's stunning. I mean, the Census Bureau has a tremendous amount of data. If people want to go to their website, they have these tables. They call them HINC tables, which just stands for household income. And they divide households by all different kinds of criteria, but it's very obvious that people who get married and have kids make more money than people who get married and don't have kids, and people who get married make more money than people who don't get married, and the longer someone stays in school, the more they're going to make money. And the longer someone keeps working until their kids leave their house, they're going to make money, make more money. So really, what the liberals want to call a rich person in America is someone in their 50s who has teenage kids and kids in college, a husband and wife who have been working hard to raise their family and to invest in their children and in their family life. And the liberals don't want to hear that, but that is the demonstrable truth based on the data published by the government of the United States through the Census Bureau.
And those families that work, earn, raise their kids, raising the next generation of taxpayers, I might add, they are also the ones that are amassing the capital that allows the economy to grow.
Without question. There's really no doubt about it. So as the traditional family shrinks as a share of American society, which is unfortunately what the census data shows, and they are the most productive members of society, and you maintain the welfare state that we've built, the burden on that family is going to get greater. And I really do think that's the fundamental divide. And I think, when you look at the exit polls from the presidential elections, and by the way, in the latest presidential election poll in 2016, on a national basis, they did not ask people if they had kids. They did back in 2012, but they didn't in 2016. But among people who were married in 2016, they voted for Trump, not for Clinton. People who were married in 2012 voted for Romney, not for Obama. And people who were married and had kids were more likely to vote for Romney, not for Obama. And so that's the pattern. And to put it quite bluntly, if you're a liberal and you're looking for a political constituency, a married couple with kids really isn't your base. And another element of it is people who go to church regularly, they do not vote for liberal presidential candidates. So you find a family, they're a married couple, they have kids, they work hard, they go to church. That's not a liberal family.
So, Terry Jeffrey, let's unpack this for just a moment, because we're talking a little bit about the economic aspects of this, a married couple with kids. That's where you see the highest medium income and obviously the savings that is a part of that builds the economy. Culturally and politically, this has ramifications for the future. As you just pointed out, married couples tend to vote conservative, non-married people vote more liberal. There's the broad picture. What does that mean then if we're seeing fewer people get married and having kids?
It means that the future for conservative politics in this country is in jeopardy. And I think if we continue this demographic change where the family is disappearing, I think that conservatives getting elected to office is going to disappear. I mean, I think this is I really do believe this is at the core of the trend. You get rid of the family, you're going to get rid of conservatism in the United States of America. And you get rid of the family, you're going to build a welfare state. And people who build a welfare state and have a political interest in a welfare state do not have a political interest in strong families. It's really that simple, and I think the Census Bureau numbers show it. So I think there really is a cultural war in the United States. We've been fighting it for a long time, but we're getting to a point where we may get beyond the point of no return, and we don't want to get there. So I think people need to stand up and fight for this. They need to fight for traditional family values. They have to make people recognize that this is really inextricably tied not only to the economic welfare of the United States, but to our freedom as individuals. We do not want to be dependent on the state. In my view, Tony, we also don't want the state teaching our kids what's right and wrong. And I think when you have broken families, there's a tendency for the state, especially through the public school system and other institutions, to move in there and become really the cultural formers, the moral formers of children and of the next generation. We don't want that. We want parents teaching their kids the values that have made Western civilization great since the beginning.
So the future of America hinges on the well-being of the family.
Yep.
All right. Terry Jeffrey, as always, a great article. You do outstanding work. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Tony.
Folks, check out the article. It's eye-opening. And again, Terry points out this comes strictly from the government's own data. This is not some, right-wing, nothing wrong with right-wing, think tank numbers that they crunch. This is the federal government. All right. When we come back, We'll be joined by Dr. Alex McFarland about teaching young people to live with a biblical worldview. That's next. Don't go away.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
You are listening to Washington Watch, coming to you from Washington, D.C., here at the headquarters of the Family Research Council. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Thursday afternoon. Let me encourage you to check out the website. Lots of resources there for you, especially links over to FRC. And if you're not receiving my daily update, please go sign up. That way you also will get the legislative alerts that will give you the not only the call to make a call or send an email, but it actually helps you. It tells you what you need to say and helps educate you so you can educate lawmakers. So, again, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, this coming March, religion and culture expert, author, and national host, Dr. Alex McFarland, will convene the 2018 Christian Worldview Week under the theme Save a Nation. The conference will take place at North Carolina's Life Community Church. The conference is March 23 and 24, I believe. Joining us now is Dr. Alex McFarland. He serves as director for the Christian Worldview and Apologetics at the Christian Worldview Center. He is co-host of American Family Radio's Talk Network's Exploring the Word talk show. He's the author of 19 books, including his newly released book. He co-authored Stand Strong in Your Faith, Live What You Believe with Confidence and Passion. Alex, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony. It's always an honor to be on. I truly appreciate it.
Those are the correct dates, March 23rd and 24th?
March 23rd, 24th. That's the Truth for a New Generation Apologetics Conference. And then March 12th, 13th, and 14th at North Greenville University, where I have the privilege of leading the apologetics program, we're having Christian Worldview Week, and we're going to have Douglas Gresham there. And that's at the university primarily for the students, although the public is welcome to come. Hopefully we're going to have you there, too, if you don't have to do some official business for the president or anything. We'd love to have you there, too.
We're working on it.
Yeah, I know we are. We are. And so I appreciate that. But you mentioned March 23, 24, and let me say to your listeners, I was just, while I was on hold, I was looking at people signing up to come to TNG, Truth for a New Generation. We've done this for almost 20 years, and this year I'm so excited, Tony, because the theme is Save a Nation. And while there are some good things going on in our government, and we thank God for that, and I urge people to pray for our leaders, we know that America needs a spiritual revival.
Absolutely.
And we can see this, and we can appeal to God to give a Holy Spirit movement in our nation. And so we're bringing together some great leaders like Josh McDowell and Todd Starnes of Fox News and apologists and leaders. And we're convening on my hometown of Greensboro, North Carolina. This is the first event I've done in Greensboro in 15 years. But people are already signed up from about 15 states to come to Greensboro March 23, 24 for the next edition of our Truth for a New Generation conference.
Well, folks, let me just tell you this. It's well worth it. I had Alex at my church when I was serving as interim pastor back in Baton Rouge last year. We had a truth conference. And I tell you, Alex, they're still talking about your presentation there. It was we had Frank Turek, yourself. We just had, sure. It was a great event. And so, folks, I would encourage you to look hard at this. And it's extremely important, especially for younger people, and that's what the Truth Conference was primarily focused on, is that helping our young people know what they believe, why they believe it, and how to defend it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it really is. And it was a privilege to be with you in Baton Rouge. And, you know, one of the people that we had who's just a great communicator and, frankly, a great thinker is Lauren Green of Fox News. And she's going to be at our event here in the spring at TNG. But, Tony, there are several things at play that perhaps weren't a challenge when you and I would have been growing up. But we live in a time, I mean, there's a lot of isms. I mean, there's multiculturalism and pluralism and basically the mindset that all beliefs are equal and valid. And, you know, you have your truth, you have my truth, or I have my own truth, and we all make our own truth. But here's something that our kids face, and it's really kind of enforced egalitarianism. Now, egalitarianism is from a word that means equal. And there's this mindset that all things are equal. And if we say there are any differences, for instance, in male and female, if we say that males and females are in some way inherently different, that must mean that we're, you know, heterosexist or we're biased or we're misogynistic. So throughout education, there's this egalitarianism. There's got to be sexual egalitarianism, that there are no differences between male and female, and I can change my gender by merely identifying. There's moral egalitarianism, that no behaviors are wrong. Everything is just my preference, as I call the shots. There's even economic egalitarianism, that we have to level the playing field from a socioeconomic standpoint. And so our kids, you know, are pummeled with this, really, and the Christian worldview says differently.
Hey, Alex, we're up against a hard break. Hold on, because I want to ask you one more question on the other side of the break. Can you hold on for a couple minutes?
Sure, sure.
Okay. All right, folks, Dr. Alex McFarland is going to hold on so we can finish our conversation. So you, hold on as well. Hold on to that steering wheel if you're driving, but don't touch that dial. We'll be right back with more Washington Watch right after this.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
I'm Tony Perkins, and this is Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're one that uses Twitter, all right, follow me, and I'll keep you updated on what's happening. At T. Perkins. Okay. Dr. Alex McFarland is holding over for me. Truth for a New Generation conference coming up in March. All right, Alex, what are some of the topics that those in attendance will learn about?
Oh, thanks for asking. Well, Josh McDowell, a great apologist, is going to talk about a couple of things. The state of youth in America, and one of the reasons that suicide is a leading cause of death among people under 30 and what we can do about that. And J. Warner Wallace is going to talk. He's going to address the issue of racism and how Christianity really has the answer to the scourge of racism. And Juan Valdez, who is a great bilingual apologist, is going to talk about the existence of God. And there are going to be sessions on things like the Bible, the authenticity of Scripture, reaching Muslims for Christ. But let me give a topic that a lot of people may not really think about immediately, but it's going to be an amazing session. Abe Hamilton III, he's a general counsel for the American Family Association and a former assistant DA of New Orleans, phenomenal thinker, phenomenal Christian leader. But Abe Hamilton III is going to be addressing African Christianity before the colonial era in America. Now, Abe Hamilton is an African-American and an attorney and a Christian. And, you know, when we're talking about sharing the gospel, sometimes our kids at the secular universities are told that, you know, evangelism is hate speech. And what's more is, you know, white European Christians, you know, imposed the gospel on slaves. And I don't want to open up a can of worms that we don't have time to fully unpack right now, but Abe Hamilton is going to give some history about Christianity on the continent of Africa before the colonial era, and that there was a thriving strand of Christianity. And so sharing the gospel is an act of love, really, but it wasn't, quote, white man's religion being imposed on Africans. In fact, there were African Christian believers even before the colonial era. Now, why are we doing all this if this sounds like it's out in the weeds? It's, as you know, Tony, because our kids, as important as education is, and it is, I mean, I've spent much of my adult life in education, and other members of my family have as well. I come from a long line of teachers. But here's the thing. So much of secular education is really all about deconstructing American history, deconstructing Christian history. And we've got to help our kids understand what they believe and how they can defend it. The Truth for New Generation tour, it's about God and country because we stand to lose both.
Without question, and this is this goes back. I was talking about this yesterday. The president, in his State of the Union address, really pointing out, without using the words American exceptionalism, he talked about rediscovering America again, and then he went right from that talking about faith and family, and that is at the core of America's exceptionalism, is our faith, is the fact that we trust in God. That Christianity has played such a prominent part. And when you talk about the deconstruction of Christianity, the deconstruction of our society, you are talking about the deconstruction of the republic. That's where it ultimately leads.
You're right. You're so right. And, you know, this thing of American exceptionalism and the idea that part of our success as a country, part of America's greatness, and yes, I want to say it, America is great and has been great, but the secret DNA of the country, that Dr. King recognized this in his 1963 Pulitzer Prize-winning work, Why We Can't Wait, by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., he talked about Christianity, our Judeo-Christian ethic, he said. Everybody from Reagan, Harry Truman, de Tocqueville, and so many others, Samuel Huntington, who was right. A Harvard professor and a member of the Carter administration. You know, politicians, ministers, historians, academics have recognized that our DNA, our moral and spiritual DNA that did touch our political, structure was Christianity.
Right,
and
no question.
We must help a new generation. I tell this, we've got to help a young generation understand how to America. And that might sound like an inappropriate sentence, but no, we've got to pass on this ethic of God and country.
And it is not for the timid. We have to be bold. We have to stand up and face the winds that may be against us. But that's what the founders did, and to rediscover what the founders established, we're going to have to do that. And I appreciate the work, Alex, that you're doing to make that happen. Alex McFarland, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
God bless you, my friend.
And we'll be in touch. All right, folks, check this out. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and you can follow the links over to find out more about Truth for a New Generation. It's really, he's been doing this for a long time, so it's well worth it. It's good stuff. So if you're in the area, you can get there. Coming up in March, go to TonyPerkins.com. By the way, here's a news flash. This just coming across the wire. Twinkie says that they are going to give, as a result of the president's tax cut, obviously supported by Congress, they are going to give their employees a bonus plus a one year of free snacks. Now, that is sweet. Hey, it just keeps rolling in. How about that? Man. Maybe I should get a part-time job with Twinkie. I want to go back for just a moment in our few moments left, because this is really important, what we were talking about with Terry Jeffrey. This is something we actually did quite extensively with we had a project a few years ago called Mapping America, and it was in our division that we've spun off. It's now on its own, the Marriage and Religion Research Institute with Dr. Pat Fagan. And you've probably, if you've been a longtime listener, you've probably heard us a couple years ago talk more about that. We used to have Dr. Fagan on all the time. In fact, I probably need to get him back on again. But this is the kind of stuff that he would do. He would take the government's data, he'd crunch the numbers, and it tells the story. And it is without question, and there's this idea, and it's even being taught in some Christian colleges that it's irresponsible to have more than two children. That is being taught. And so people think, well, maybe I should, because there's this idea that children are consumers of all things good and don't produce anything. They just consume. Well, not if they're raised right. Now you say, well, you're biased. You have five children. Yes, I have five children, and I wish I had five more. If I would have realized how great children are, how much fun it is, and what a privilege it is to raise kids. I was 30 years old before I realized that. That's where we had our first one. And I worked as long as I could to get kids. But the reality is children produce. They are our future. And this economic data, the census data, shows the economic power of families. Now, families, and especially young people, hear this. You know, the two things you can do, and again, this is backed up by all the facts, all the data. Two things you can do to guarantee that, almost guarantee, you would never be in poverty. Almost guarantee. Finish school. And when you get, and don't have children until you get married. You do those two things, and there is a high probability that you will never experience poverty as an adult. So, but not only that, not only is it a preventative toward poverty, it is the antidote to poverty. It will create wealth. It creates, I mean, they are the most economically sound configuration is a married mom and a dad with kids. And they generate wealth that they save. More than any other, they save. And what happens when you save money, when you put it in the bank, you put it in a money market, you put it in your 401k, whatever it is, what you're doing is you're making capital available for others to use to create. So you're creating capital for other people to create economic growth. And our GDP, our gross domestic product, which Louis Gohmert was talking about earlier about how we're seeing growth in it, well, we're limited on that growth if our population is diminishing. I mean, key to growing our gross domestic product is to also keeping our population moving forward. We have slipped below the sustainability rate, or our rate of reproduction is at a point where we will not keep our population as it is. It will begin to diminish. Some people say, well, we need to get rid of some people. We got too many people on this planet. What will happen is when you begin to move into a demographic decline, it will be followed by, really on parallel track, an economic decline. And as was pointed out by Terry Jeffries earlier, that, as Terry Jeffries said, if we have this baby boomer generation getting older, and you're going to have like one worker for, I don't remember the exact number, but it was in the teens, might have been 17, 18 retirees for one worker eventually. That doesn't work. And we have created this really socialistic hybrid of a government that provides all of these government benefits, and we're not going to have any workers to support it. Now, the other thing about the family as well is it is the best way to transfer values from one generation to the next. And that happens most consistently in families with a mom and a dad who are married. And we hear all this about the cultural decline of the country. Yes, it's happening. And we hear about children, you know, young people walking away from the faith. We talked about this, I guess, last week, even backed up by a new Harvard study, research, that shows that that's not necessarily the case. It's certainly not the case among those who are growing up in genuinely Christian-rooted homes, homes where Christianity is not just something you know, occasionally practice on the weekends, but it is at the core of what defines your family. And when that is the case, those values, because they become, they become inherent in one's personal belief and identity and identification with Christ, they carry them on. They don't lose them in college. Why kids lose that when they leave home is because they never had it. They were just kind of doing it because mom and dad said to do it, or, you know, we did it on the weekends. They will emulate their parents. Moms and dads, if your faith is genuine and you're living it out as an example to your kids, chances are very good that your kids will follow. But if you just give lip service to your faith and it's not seen in your conduct, but rather it's just something you roll out on the weekends. Well, yeah, don't be surprised if your children walk away from it when they leave home. Families are essential, and we need to stand up and defend the family, and it starts in the home with our family. We need to live it out. Maybe you've made some mistakes in the past. Hey, today is a new day. Make a commitment, especially fathers, that you're going to lead your families in a way that honors God, and you're going to be an example to your children. Maybe you've made mistakes in the past. Hey, tell your kids, your wife, hey, I've made mistakes, but we're starting new. It's never too late. And be an example. And as we begin to change our families, and we begin to bring our families back to to the core of what has really been the essence of America, faith, family, and freedom, when we do that, we will affect the rest of the world. But it starts with each of us making the decision to do that. It's essential to America's future. All right, folks, that wraps up our time for today. Thanks so much for joining us. Again, check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where it says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. Again, that's 1-866-372-7234. 372-7234.